took a shot at the door where a Gwaela would think to put a lock. The door cracked in half along its middle. A swift kick from the XV-95, and it fell in completely, revealing a bound figure behind, far larger than a standard Gwaeron Shah, and shackled from maw to toe. The Cyocule gnashed and clacked, like this was the Psyker it sought. The figure's eyes began to glow white. His suspicions confirmed, Kais took the shot, vaporizing the figure in an instant. Kais slid the olfactory relays of the battlesuit to maximum as he took in the aftermath of a long calculated strategy put into lethal effect. The air stank of vaporized blood, burned alloy, and ozone. He inhaled the scent deeply and moved on up the stairs to the uppermost levels of the fortress. Master Castellan Modron of the Angels of Absolution stood surrounded by his trusted veterans, his powered broadsword drawn and his storm shield canted against his thigh. A scowl marred his patrician features, lit by the candle lumens of the great octagon. Above him was the dome of St. Achtor, the painted cherubs and seraphs smiling down as they brought water to Ferna of the Forest, and winding around him was the incense of his most pious servitor attendants. As the Master Castellan of Soul's Well, he had a duty to defend it with his life and limb, leading the garrison troops to victory over whatever malignant forces were acting upon it. With the fires of outrage burning at his heart, Modron felt more like an angered animal than a leader of men. The urge to kill was upon him. His sanctum, his fortress, had been infected by a plague that had already claimed a dozen good men. And now, according to the Hidden Brotherhood, an alien champion was loose in their midst, running riot in some manner of stealth or warsuit.
"We will engage it in here," said Modron, his tone cold and certain. "It is nothing more than an assassin, and I will not run from it."
He put two fingers on the exterior nodes of his displacer field, checking the temperamental device was still active, and nodded to himself.
"Aye, my lord."
Modron's company champion, the stocky but dexterous bladesman known as Brother Jalamus, brought the hilt of his Terran greatsword to his helm before whipping it away in a diagonal slash.
"I will cut its limbs from its body and deliver it to you, so that you may have the pleasure of dealing with the pilot inside."
Modron nodded.
"Please do."
He motioned to his hand-picked team of veterans to take their places around the edges of the room.
"Though I make no apologies if I spit it on my blade first. Epistolary thorn, ensure the bait does not get under our feet or exhibit any behavior that will complicate our work. This will be no easy fight, and our locations are of vital importance."
The Master Castellan checked the glowing triangles upon his helm relay. All was in position above as well as below. He cast a glance at the Devastator squad he had stationed in the Whispering Balcony, behind the ornate balustrade that lined the upper stratum of the mosaic-lined dome. He nodded, satisfied they were hidden well enough. Then, despite himself, he found his eyes drawn once again to the three astropaths in the centre of the massive octagonal hall. The Psykers were bound one per side to the grill-like facings of a tripartite truthfinder rack of ancient design. They had their eyes hidden with iron masks and their mouths clamped with the long-forsaken devices known as Skald's bridles. The brutal instruments were still thick with dust after being brought out from reliquies that had lain undisturbed for millennia. They were amongst those few relics of the past that the Angels of Absolution did not like to venerate. But the Master Castellan knew well from the events of the last few days that the Psyker plague could appear in moments, causing one afflicted by it to expel a vile liquid that spread it to all those it touched. Only a member of the Librarius could keep infected Psykers under control, and he had summoned Thorn to his side for just that reason. But to Modron, it seemed a physical blockade against such effects was a wise additional precaution.
"Master Castellan," said Thorn, "I can feel its approach. It will be here in less than a minute at its current pace."
Modron touched the Aquila tattooed upon his temple and closed his eyes just for a brief moment.
"Then may the lion bless our swords," he said softly.
Tutor Twiceblade monitored Kaisa's progress from the safety of the Conquest's relay throne. He was couched in an ergonomically optimal posture, designed to promote well-being. yet his eyes were sore from staring, and his veins were thumping fit to burst. The surviving X-5 stealth drone that accompanied Kaisa's infiltration, boosting the chameleonic properties of his ghost keel in the process, was still beaming up every aspect of his progress through the Gweiron Shah fortress. The Monat neared the mountain's heart now, having bypassed nearly every hazard that stood in his way. Kais was a far more lethal weapon than any missile, macro-pulse cannon or high-caliber railgun, a leader indeed rather than word, and arguably one of the three finest warriors in all the Tao Empire. In all likelihood, he would achieve his goals with utmost efficiency. Tutor Twiceblade had learned a lot just by watching him. But he was also one of the three famous Students of Puretide, an icon of the Tao Va that was of consummate importance. His was a genius of such insight, he could secure victory for expeditionary forces time and time again. He was irreplaceable, of paramount value to the greater good. To lose him to an unauthorized sortie would be amongst the worst crimes against the Tao Va imaginable. The infamous punishment of the Malk La ritual, levelled only at those commanders who committed a criminal waste of resources, would only be the beginning. But whatever censure was brought against him, it would be nothing next to the scouring soul pain of a truly grotesque failure. The disgrace of getting Kais killed would eat him from the inside out until his final end. It was too late. The deed was done. As he watched, Kais drove further into the Gweiron Shah citadel. Tutor Twiceblade sat forwards in his seat, hands like claws digging into the quasi-foam of the throne's armrests. The Monat was steadily approaching the centre of the Gweiron Shah fortress and the complex energy signatures that lay within. Transfixed, the tutor did not notice the icon for one of the Gweiron Shah ships in low orbit slowly relocate on the display's macro-informational, moving until it was directly above the giant fortification. Kais sent a complex pulse of hypersonic sound along the corridor and into the massive chamber he could see just beyond. Octagonal, ringed by a balcony and with a tall dome at its peak, it had a simple rotational symmetry that was pleasing to the Monat's eyes. Such structures were easy to process, and even to weaponize, mapping well over his route calculations concerning engagements concluded within interior spaces. It could provide up to a 3.4% efficiency enhancement to his kill-to-duration ratio, and hence met with his full approval. Within the octagonal space were more Gweiron Shah warriors, some present at the heart of the chamber, others stationed in ambush around the gallery in its upper levels. They believed themselves hidden. It was an amazing feat of naivety, given that they were wearing brightly coloured, heavy-emission-powered armour that made a constant low thrum. At the heart of the chamber was a trio of figures wearing little more than robes and elaborate necklaces. The iron-bound skull shivered vigorously next to him, the constant clack, 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 clack of its teeth, an additional layer of information that Kais was glad to process. To hear a sound first-hand was unusual, and made a refreshing change from the second-hand pre-parse data of the XV-95. He waited, as immobile as a mantis. It would not be long before the Gweiron Shah gave in to their need for mindless tribal chatter, providing their own distraction, and he could wait as long as necessary. Patience, as Shadow Sun had taught him so long ago, was the brother of silence and stillness, together the most lethal weapons of all. Sure enough, it was a matter of less than a deck when the most elaborately armoured of their number turned to talk to his subordinates. Kais knew enough about the Gweiron Shah mindset to know that as soon as the celebrated leader figure spoke, every warrior's eyes would be on him, out of respect. The Monat called up his countermeasures and darted down the corridor for the kill. Master Castellan Modron turned to his brothers and spoke.
When the Xenos moves into... The room suddenly exploded into blinding light, 1,000 contradictory images appearing on Modron's helm display.
His artificer armor's machine spirit screamed in pain and confusion, but he was already moving, darting behind Brother Jalimus to cover Epistolary Thorn with his storm shield. His instincts were proven correct. The shield suddenly crashed backwards in a burst of energy, the backwash of heat so intense Modron could feel it through his armor. He was fighting blind, riding his momentum to skid into the lee of the nearest pillar even as he listened for the engines of the giant Xenos machine. There it was, under the multitone scream of his machine spirit, a faint hum of engines coming in to skirt the edge of the chamber. Modron's vision cleared in time to see the astropaths disappear in a blaze of light and flame. All three of them simply disintegrated from the waist up, along with the top half of the Truthfinder rack. Blood spurted from those arteries not cauterized by the blast, a cluster of tiny fountains that turned the Psyker's robes from green to crimson and black.
"West flank!" he shouted. "Kill it!"
The company champion, Brother Jalamus, charged past Epistolary Thorn and on towards the shimmer of energy at the wall. His movements seemed to blur as he passed the chanting librarian. Jalamus leapt, evading a sudden blast of energy to plant his feet on the side of the chamber, then pushed off hard with his greatsword outstretched for a killing thrust. He passed straight through the warsuit-sized shimmer of energy to collide hard with a mosaic beyond it, staggering away before regaining his feet. A mirage. Grimacing, Modron ripped off his helm. At least he could trust his eyes.
"No!"
shouted Thorn. Modron ducked, just as a column of energy shot over his head, the smell of his own burning scalp mingling with a dry, choking fog of burned stone. He ducked and rolled again, suddenly aware of the looming warsuit to his left, then came up with his shield before him. He did not so much deflect the second blast as rush into it, trusting to the storm shield's ancient force field to protect him, then broke left and swung his broadsword in a rising diagonal sweep. The warsuit raised its shin to intercept the blow, even as it blasted Jalamus to atoms, but it did not evade. The sword bit deep, all but cutting the limb free in a spray of white sparks. The warsuit boosted high, nearly yanking the blade from Modron's hands, before kicking him so hard he skidded across the flagstones on his back. The Master Castellan felt a savage sense of relief when he realized his sword was still in his grip. Epistolary Thorn was suddenly above him, conjuring a burst of blue fire that raced out like a vengeful ghost. It swayed the Xenos suit's multi-lensed head in blistering fire. The Xenos thing recoiled, and Thorn moved in for the kill, but a heavy disc-like drone raced in to smack hard into the librarian and send him sprawling. There was a crack whoosh from above as missiles arced down from the Devastator team on the Whispering Balcony. The disruptive electrogeists the Xenos was sending out had done their job all too well, for to Modron's horror, the crack missiles struck Thorn instead of the warsuit. The librarian fell in a blackened, torn heap, blood seeping from his rent armor.
"Helms off!"
shouted Modron, his sensation of outrage mingling with a growing suspicion the situation was already long out of his control.
"It's confounding our machine spirits!"
He jumped upright as the warsuit opened fire upon the Devastators in the gallery above. The killing beam from its strange tripartite weapon vaporized the balustrade and much of the pillar, taking with it two of the heavy weapon troopers behind. Modron charged, slashing his powered broadsword into the jet vents of the Xenos warsuit. At the edge of the chamber, veteran Sergeant Pathan raised his plasma gun and took his shot, only to fall back in an explosion of light a moment later. Crying out, Modron swung his sword hard and carved a wedge from the thing's arm before dodging away, moving to its blind spot and striking for its torso. The blade cut in, its tip digging deep, but it did not find the pilot inside. The Xenos creature's armor was a formidable defense, even against a powered weapon. But Modron had not truly expected to make the kill with his sword. The Xenos thing had moved close now to the center of the room. Close. So very close. Tutor Twiceblade felt himself shake with emotion. His mind was swamped, a tide of frantic hope crashing against cliffs of stone-cold fear. As he watched, Kais was taking apart the Gwaeron Shah command echelon with consummate skill. It was like witnessing a master bladesman go through steps long rehearsed, each movement leading to a trap, an illusion, a killing strike that made his opponent seem clumsy and slow by comparison. Twiceblade shook his head in amazement as the tempo of the dance sped up, the Gwaeron Shah slain in ones, twos and threes, like the inevitable culminations of a string of mathematical equations. To the tutor's mind, this was the supremacy of the Tau Vaa writ large. A tiny chime came from the orbital distribution suite. He spared the hex screen an irritable glance for a fraction of a heartbeat, idly noting that the Gwaeron Shah ship, now positioned directly over the mountain fortress, despite that ship facing directly away from the nearest Tau monitor vessel that was observing it, had turned red. The lethal warning red that denoted target lock. Twiceblade's eyes grew wide with horror. Kais dodged out of the path of the shimmering blade of the Gwaeron Shah leader, sliding left as another hacking sweep came in. A glancing blow, it carved a thick wedge of alloy from his arm, but did not compromise the systems beneath. A few moments before, the swordsman had landed a heavy blow upon his jetpack, but by Kais's calculation, that was acceptable damage. In such close confines, he could afford up to a 30% loss of efficacy before lack of vertical mobility became a hindrance. A Gwaeron Shah to his right fired a blast from some manner of plasma weapon. The control cocoon grew painfully hot as the superheated energy penetrated the machine's flank, burning all the way through to the interior. Without diverting his attention from the Gwaeron Shah leader, Kais hit the recessed panel by his feet that ejected the suite's pulse pistol, took it up with his offhand, and pointed it through the steaming hole to shoot the plasma gunner in the head. The Space Marine leader came in hard, his blade leaving crackling arcs as he hacked at the Ghost Keel's plexus hatch. Kais ran a swift recalculation, blasting the Gwaeron Shah with a dual beam from his shoulder weapons to force him to raise his shield. He kicked the crude protective slab hard, sending the warrior sprawling to buy him enough range for the kill. The Gwaeron Shah wasted a valuable second replacing his helm. A foolish error of judgment, thought Kais, especially now that his EMP reservoir was nearly at full. First the pulse, then the kill, then he would make his escape. Now, read the autotrans as it rendered the human's command. Kais! Came the voice of Tutor Twiceblade, emerging painfully loud from the speaker nodes of his control cocoon as alert signals flared on his command and control suite. They have orbital! The Monat felt his concentration flicker and go blank just for a moment. Just as he was rerouting all his power to the XV-95's emergency force shield, his focus was shattered by the one element he had not factored in his calculations. Aid. In that same moment, the beautifully painted dome above them came apart. A column of killing energy lanced down from low orbit, and Kais's perfectly calculated rampage died in a storm of light. Chapter 19. The Battle Within. Saltire Near Space. Kroot Warsphere, Vork Karal.
Battle stations!
Zedro Farron opened his eyes, his hands automatically checking the critical points of his bolt rifle. Slowly, his augmented senses pierced the ambered loom. He was not within the Night Harrower, as he had somehow presumed, but held tight in a harness on the sidewall of a Goliath-class boarding torpedo. He let his hands run over the exquisitely crafted rifle once more, mentally preparing for the battle to come. Then something changed. Like a radioactive sun breaking through the murk of a cold winter dawn, the events of the last few weeks began to coalesce in Farron's mind. Everything. The fate of Saltire Vex, the plight of its riggers, the twisted victims of All-Hallow, the jet-black armor of the Traitor Angel, the news of a pact made by the Dark Angels with the Xenos, an arrangement that would let them attack their own successor chapter by proxy and do the dirty work of the Tau in return. And worst of all, the revelations of Pieter Morricani and the implications of his absence, for he was not present on Farron's rune display. No explanation, no status register entry, just an empty berth. It did not bode well. Farron watched the expressions of his brothers around him change, as they too came around from Varad's botched mind wipe. Realization began to dawn after a moment of taking in their surroundings. He saw vague confusion give way to slow outrage on Enrod's pinched features, smouldering anger becoming visible upon Thrun's broad and uncomplicated face. Ghazar's thin lips peeled back to reveal a grimace of disgust, whilst Pavel clutched his bald head in his white-knuckled hands. Despite it all, Farron's plan had worked. At the critical moment, the Primaris Marines had pushed their augmented biological system so far into overdrive that their furnaces had burned out whatever baleful chemicals had been pumped into them. This time, at least, the mind-altering treatments of the Dark Angel's Apothecarium had failed to erode their memories entirely. Chaplain Zerov's sepulchral tones came from a ruby-eyed servo skull at the far end of the torpedo, static lacing his every recorded syllable.
We will not be returning to the heretic planet of Saltire Vex this day, said Zeroff through the skull. Ill discipline within our ranks has allowed its traitorous populace a chance to escape and to spread their heresy still further.
You're the traitor here,
growled Farron under his breath. But he did not trigger his vox. Instead, he made his lips into a tight line. He knew well, as a lieutenant surrounded by his men, this was not the time. A collapse in morale, the confusion and doubt that would follow, could be disastrous in an active war zone. Perhaps, thought Farron, the interrogator chaplain and his coterie were counting on it.
"Be calm, brothers," said Farron over the Primaris Voxlink. "If we are to seek justice, we must survive." "The Emperor has revealed the truth to us through his divine tarot," continued Zeroff's voice. "It is the pawn of the void we seek this day. These traitors to humanity have taken refuge upon a mercenary ship codified as a Kroot war sphere."
Farron felt the tightness in his throat get worse. He knew next to nothing about the enemy they were about to face. Even the priests of Mars had not had much to say about such exotic warships, other than that they should be destroyed at range, if at all possible.
"Many of the unsanctioned refugees aboard the war sphere have contracted a psychic plague," continued the message. "Do not let their emanations touch you under any circumstances, and give the Emperor's mercy to those that become afflicted."
Enrod spat a gobbet of acidic saliva on the bulkhead opposite. It hissed gently as it scarred the armor plas, filling the air with an eye-stinging scent.
"You Primaris Marines of the Third Company have been given the honor of the Vanguard Assault. We will attack from another vector and make for the engine cores. Together, we will destroy this nest of corruption, this offense against the Imperium's rightful domain, or we shall die in the attempt."
The message cut off abruptly. For a while, the only sound in the boarding torpedo was the dull thrum of its passage through space. Then the proximity alarm at the boarding torpedo's tip gave a loud, bright chime.
"Brothers," said Farron, "we will do our duty here, as Dark Angels and as true sons of the Lion. We will lead by example. We will destroy the enemies of the Imperium as we were born to do."
Thrun nodded, but other than that, his brethren remained still. The chime at the fore of the boarding torpedo rang out once more.
"Remember, this is a plague site, and that the infection it bears could affect countless other worlds unless we destroy it," continued Farron. "Do not let your focus be robbed by the truths we have uncovered. We can deal with that situation properly upon our return."
None of the Primaris Marines replied. Farron chose to take their sullen silence for acquiescence, if not agreement. Perhaps this was what it truly was to be a Dark Angel, to be a doer and stoic force of destruction, fighting not for glory, nor for the joy of battle, but for duty, and duty alone. The proximity alarm's infrequent chime became more strident, more insistent, until it rang like an inferno monitor at full blast.
"Ready your weapons, brothers," called out Farron.
There was a deafening boom and a tremendous bone-shaking impact as the boarding torpedo slammed home into the side of the Xenos craft. Farron felt himself yanked forwards and then hurled back, the torpedo around him filling with a fierce roar as the circular melter array behind its tip burned through the outer hull of the war sphere. Then, with a ringing, slamming impact, the tip of the boarding torpedo hinged outward into the enemy craft. The harnesses holding the Primaris Marines shot open with a fierce hiss of hydraulics. Farron was the first out, as ever, his bolt rifle at his shoulder as he burst through the smoke, looking for movement. His brothers were close behind. The corridor they had emerged into was dark, misted, and almost surreally humid, its sides and ceiling not walls so much as a thick mass of cables, twisted girders, and coiling pipes. Far too many crawl spaces, thought the lieutenant. Far too many places for an... Farron had already shot the first Kroot on instinct before he had fully registered its presence. Its rangy body toppled down from the pipelines, one ankle caught so that it dangled upside down with its sheaf of head quills scraping the grills of the floor. Enrod took another further down the corridor a split second later, his expertly placed bolt striking the gangling green-grey Xenos in the chest, just as it drew a bead with a long-barreled spined rifle. Thrun took a hit in the shoulder from above, growling in wordless anger before threading a shot into the gantry overhead to fell a third avian Xenos. Farron's helm display showed no hostiles.
"Clear!"
Parvel came up beside him, his bald head glinting in the green light of the buzzing lumen spheres that were dotted seemingly at random along the strangely organic corridor.
"You realize the Tau make use of Kroot as snipers," said Farron.
The sergeant nodded. Good point, Lieutenant, he said, unclipping his helm from his waist and sliding it smoothly over his head. Farron was taken aback at the bald man's acquiescence, but he said nothing.
Should I take point? Said Enrod. If they use snipers, you should not be at the fore. We cannot afford to lose your leadership. Not now. My thanks, said Farron.
Though it rankled to see another take the risks on his behalf, it did make sense tactically.
Omnissiah, bless your aim then, Enrod, and go well.
The lieutenant could not help but smile as his squads moved on, Enrod at the front and Parvel clad in full battle plate from head to toe. A fierce sense of triumph filled his chest. Maybe they had a chance after all.
Move swiftly, brothers, he said,
standing straighter than he had done for the first time in years.
We have an example to set.
Pieter Morricone felt something shift inside his mind, a worm of consciousness wriggling in his forebrain. It was disturbing his long, deep sleep. He made a fist in his mind, enfolding the worm in his ethereal grasp and hoping to squash the life from it. But all that came from between his fingers was light. He opened his eyes just a fraction. Varad's mutilated visage stared down at him. The apothecary had a look on his face, as if he was examining a bacto culture dish, and one that had not yielded the results he expected. The metallic jaw that dominated the lower half of the apothecary's face moved an inch to one side, giving him a disappointed leer.
It appears, by the movement of the subject's pupils, he is conscious.
Morricone made to contradict that statement, purely out of sheer contrarian habit. All that came out was a strange gurgle.
The after effects of the asset's cerebral fluids are still powerful, said the apothecary. He senses his surroundings, but does not fully register.
Morricone's spirit laughed inside. He felt his chest twitch, a slight vibration at first, but then a swelling, a shaking, and the approximation of a true laugh.
Interesting, said the apothecary, beckoning to his servo skull. Decius, record this, please.
Morricone felt his breath fill his lungs, his intercostal muscles flexing as feeling returned to his chest. Whatever sedative he had been given was wearing off fast.
You are,
said Morricone. His vision swam for a moment, then came back again. Varad recoiled.
I am what?
Asked the apothecary, his eyes narrowing.
You are not as clever as you think,
slurred Morricone, smiling dumbly in triumph at managing a whole sentence.
Oh, really? And why is that, Sergeant Morricone?
We gave the riggers a way out, and we know, he said, nodding slowly. We know what you do in the lion's name.
What are you talking about, Sergeant?
We,
he said, screwing his eyes up. Why was the damn Medicaid making it so difficult?
We Primaris Marines,
he said, awkwardly jabbing a thumb at his own chest.
We know.
And what do you claim to know?
About the mind wipe,
said Morricone, his eyes open crazily wide.
About the asset. And the traitor angel!
Varad's face, those parts of it that were still flesh and blood, suddenly showed an unhealthy pallor. For a moment, he did not speak, move, or even breathe.
Subject is sadly delirious,
he said, matter-of-factly, turning his head towards his servo skull.
These babblings are of no logical use. Codify the last 2 minutes under Enigma protocols and archive dump at the first opportunity.
The servo skull gave a short blurt of acknowledgement.
We know,
cried out Morricone, his thoughts crystallizing as his smile broadened.
More than you realize. We know your secrets, and you know less about the works of Particol than you think.
Varad looked thoughtful. He pulled on the straps binding Morricone to the table. They were tight as ever, not allowing more than a single inch of free movement. Then the apothecary stood up to his full height and made his way over to a corner of the room, his servo skull drifting after him. Morricone heard him speak from the far corner of the room, his voice almost too faint to hear.
Cyvox relay initiated, he said. Extremis protocol.
The sounds of static drifted across the room, accompanied by a distant wailing.
Brother Dothrail, said Varad, the asset was not as we thought. New contingent aware. Recommend immediate mortis program.
Morricone frowned. What was he saying?
Repeat. Recommend location of following subjects during active service. Recommend premature termination of subjects Farron, Thrun, Gzar, Pavel, Enrod. Prioritize reclaim of listed Primaris active gene seed.
A dark cloud of misgivings rumbled across the horizons of Morricone's troubled mindscape. The feeling only increased when Varad's face swam back into his line of sight. The apothecary was red-faced, flushed almost, his eyes slits of disapproval bordering on hatred.
You'll get what you deserve soon enough, said Morricone. We Primaris Marines are the future, and we will be the death of you.
Experiment terminated, said Varad, taking his drill-tipped narthesium from a steel shelf under his medlectern.
Subject irreconcilable. On this day, Brother Pieter Morricone died of his wounds.
The bulky apparatus had the white helix of the healer emblazoned upon its side, but there was no doubt as to its primary barrel's true function. Morricone thrashed and spasmed, hoping against all reason he could break from the heavy straps that held him to the slab. Some of them gave a little, but most were so tight to his body they did no more than creak in protest. The last thing that Hellblaster Sergeant Pieter Morricone ever felt was the cool tip of the apothecary's narthesium placed upon his right temple. Interrogator Chaplain Zeroff smashed the last croot out of his path with a backhand sweep of his Crozius Arcanum. Ropes of electricity coursed across the alien's broken body as he kicked it out of the way, its hollow bones breaking under his boot with a satisfying crunch.
That's the last of them, for now, he said. A shame.
There will be more,
said Company Master Gabriel, wiping the gore from his blade with the hem of his new silken cloak. Behind them, the gantry was thick with alien corpses. Many had been bludgeoned to death, the scorch marks of the Crozius's disruption field surrounding each shattering blow. Some had been hacked apart or cut in two by brutal sweeps of Company Master Gabriel's power sword, their corpses gently smouldering. The victims of Autonicus's clinical attacks lay here and there, cored through the chest by spheres of superheated gas, hacked apart by his cogtoothed axe or mangled by the grasping, merciless grip of his servo arm. Yet more were burned to the bone, as if they had stood too near a raging blast furnace. In many ways they had, for when his battle ire was up, the psychic wrath of Epistolary Dothrail was something to behold. The trail of corpses stretched all the way back to the Thunderhawk, perhaps a quarter of a mile distant, with its landing apparatus maglocked to the outside of the war sphere.
That's the engine core, up ahead, said Autonicus. The edge of it, at least. It is a well-preserved example of its kind, reliable but primitive, and easy enough to destroy.
Excellent, said Zeroff. Make ready the detonation.
The tech marine nodded curtly and went to work. His servo arm peeled back layers of insulation to get at the giant cylindrical core beneath as he took a string of melter charges from his waist.
Interrogator Chaplain, said Epistolary Dothrail. A moment, please.
Zeroff turned to Dothrail as the librarian held up an arch-shaped relic. Within it was a yellowed cranium covered in the patina of extreme age. The skull's teeth were clacking as if it was trying to communicate. Dothrail held it close, staring into the empty sockets and cocking his head as if he was straining to hear. Blood began to seep out of the skull's eyes, but he seemed to pay it no mind. Zeroff, too, ignored it. Only for now, he told himself. Only for now.
Varad sends word from the blade. It is not good. He says the asset is no longer working as we thought, and that the subjects are aware. He requests we engage the Mortis program.
Zeroff felt his ire build to truly volcanic levels. The Primaris contingent, under the capable but troublesome Lieutenant Farron, had stumbled over secrets that should never come to light. And that, as any member of the inner circle knew well enough, could not be borne.
Finish up swiftly, Autonicus, he said,
his voice as serious as the grave, as he located the Primaris runes on his helm display.
We make for the central chamber. We must pay the lieutenant and his men our final respects.
Zedropharan emerged from the corridor network into the light of the ovoid chamber beyond. After several hard-fought skirmishes against small groups of Kroot, he was spattered with stinking Xenos blood and low on ammunition. Still, he had a buoyant confidence in his step that he had not felt for months. In his experience, the black-and-white realities of combat had a way of drowning out an unquiet soul. The artificial cavern they found themselves inside was lined top to bottom with cables, girders, and tree-like constructions, festooned with actual vegetation, together forming an industrial forest all around its edge. The overall effect meant that the area felt more like a woodline clearing than a space aboard an interstellar craft. Right in the center was a mound of captured weapons and skulls, atop which was a throne. Ghazar, redeployed in Farron's squad whilst the Harrower was undergoing repairs, had quickly surmised the war sphere was built along a strong central axis. After that, he had led them to their destination with an unstinting sense of direction and purpose. Already, it was paying off. His hypothesis held out when they found the corridors fanning out from a central point, like the spokes of a wheel. It was a primitive but effective design, and not hard to navigate, despite the clustered jungle of pipes and struts that cluttered its corridors.
"Spread out, brothers," said Farron, dispatching his squads left and right with a gesture. "These Xenos like to believe they specialize in ambush. They will attempt to confound us with stealth."
A great yapping cacophony, like the howling of mutant hounds, emerged from the corridors, stretching away on the other side of the artificial cavern. Suddenly, a living tide of beasts came pouring through the corridors to spill out and fill the space with horrendous noise. They were lithe, long-beaked creatures that looked halfway between Kroot and giant, bald attack dogs.
"Or perhaps not," said Farron. "Fire at will!"
Farron and his brothers began to put down the creatures with clinical efficiency. Every shot fired bowled one of the beasts over before spreading its remains wide in the ensuing explosion. Soon enough, the sight had turned into a blood-maddened tableau of butchery that had more in common with some hellish demonic visitation than a clean military exercise. Farron reloaded his clip, picking off kill shots once more as Ghazar reloaded his own rifle and thickened the volley beside him.
On Mars, they had relished such situations. The quadrupedal servitors of the tech priests expended in great measure, only to have their brain canisters recovered at the end of each exercise, and vat grown a new body overnight.
The training was intended to teach them how to refine target priority and ammunition conservation in the face of superior numbers. If only Pater Call could see us now, thought Farron. When Farron killed the fifth beast in a row, his bolt rifle clicked empty once more, the last of his clips already expended in the butchery since they had boarded less than 20 minutes ago. Ghazar, Enrod, and Pavel needed to reload too, but they had made every bolt count. By the time the last beast packs had made it halfway across the artificial clearing, they were starting to waver. Most of them had turned and ran, the explosive deaths of their brethren enough to send the rest packing once their impetus was lost. Only three of the creatures had made it to the Primaris line. Farron unsheathed his power sword and sliced one of the beasts in two, with Ghazar stabbing another mid-leap with his combat knife. Nearby, Thrun caught the third beast by the jaws and ripped its skull in two with an ursine grunt of effort. As an attack wave, they had left a lot to be desired. But as a distraction, they were excellent. Even as the last of the hounds were dispatched, a dozen heavily ornamented Kroot stood from amongst a pile of trophies in the centre of the clearing. There was a motley assortment of humans with them, mercenaries and traitors who opened fire alongside the Kroot. Weapons and skulls cascaded down around their legs as the ambushers took their shots. Caught in the open, the Primaris Marines had no immediate reply. Enrod went down heavily, his right eye shot out through his lens. Farron was hit in the neck, stumbling back, with the command to take cover dying in his throat. Ghazar took three bullets at once and was knocked off his feet, hitting the deck with a loud clang. Then the giant grey Kroot at the heart of the pile of trophy weapons levelled a long, sling-held plasma rifle with a blade jutting down from its tip. He aimed carefully and put a sizzling blue bolt right through Thrun's chest. Farron drew his powered broadblade from its scabbard and charged. He turned his shoulder to take two sniper's bullets on his pauldron as he closed the distance. He felt the pain in his throat subside as the shock of the sniper's bullet passed, and a swell of anger rose in his chest as he pointed the tip of his blade towards the giant grey-quilled Xenos in the midst of the enemy.
"Face me!"
The challenge came out as more of a strangulated rasp than the bellicose roar he had hoped for, but its message was clear enough. The grey-quilled giant stepped out of the trophy pile completely, its taloned feet clacking as it took a warrior's stance. Farron pounded towards it, arms spread, to make himself large and hence keep its attention. Just a few more meters. The bladed plasma rifle came at him, fast as a whip. He had barely begun to parry when it smacked hard into his head, smashing his focus right out of him. The rifle came around again at terrible speed, clanging from his gorget so hard it nearly toppled him over. The third blow hit the heel of his palm. It took the power sword from his grip, sending the blade spinning away. The Xenos had strength, speed, and reach, far more than Farron, especially with his broad blade a few strides distant. He dodged the grey monster's next blow, but the rifle came back fast in the opposite direction. The hooking sweep took his legs out from under him, and he landed heavily in a pile of long-rusted lasguns. The Kroot warlord rose over him, a horrible, barking laugh emerging from its blunt, terrapin-like beak. Jensir Deel winced as she watched the Grey King take Farron down in a matter of seconds. She had recognized the lieutenant's distinctive helmet the moment he had come into the cavern, and felt a wash of mixed feelings, even as the Kroot hounds bounded past her and their ambush began in earnest. He had saved her back on Saltai of X, and in doing so, given her and her people a real chance at survival. She could not repay that with an attempt on his life. Instead, she had shot at the stanchions above the Primaris Marines, missing on purpose, but not by such a margin that the Kroot would later call her on it. With three of the Primaris Marines down already, and Farron on his knees, she felt as if she had made the right choice. She lowered her pulse carbine and stepped back, her eyes fixed on the duel.
"Deel!"
shouted Delagio as she took a shot at the Primaris Marines converging on their position.
"What the hell are you doing? Take them down!"
By the rig's woman's side, Markins was letting fly with a flamer linked straight to his old barrel of promethium. Each giant plume of flame filled the air with greasy black smoke as it billowed towards the Space Marines, recovering and reloading their guns in the middle of the clearing.
"They are allies," she protested. "At least they were."
"You, man,"
said the winged Kroot shaman as he glided in from the false trees to land behind her with a crunch. He grabbed her arm roughly and raised her carbine to point at the Primaris Marines once more.
"Must kill for good of great."
Deel grimaced, shaking the bird-like creature off before taking a few more desultory shots at the nearest Primaris Marine. Whatever happened here, she had a feeling it would not end well. Farron scuffled back towards his broadblade, sliding amongst the scrap as a blast of plasma melted a steaming hole between his legs. The grey giant was shooting at him now, presumably considering the duel over, barring the execution. The creature's very arrogance gave Farron a pulse of pure emperor-given hatred. His hand touched something sharp in the trophy pile, and before he knew it, he had hurled a jagged Xenos knife hard at the creature's head. It battered the blade from the air with the end of its rifle, as if swatting away a fly. It was an opening, at least. Farron made full use of it, springing forward with a roar to catch the towering Xenos around the waist and bear him down into the trophy pile in a crash of limbs and scattering weapons. The giant grabbed his head almost immediately, with its scrabbling claws wrenching his helm this way and that, so hard that Farron felt his neck would tear open and his head come clean off. The creature had one leg locked around his arm, pinning it to his body. Its frantic crocodilian thrashing, combined with the thick greasy oil of its skin, made it almost impossible to gain purchase in return. Farron felt one of its talons pierce the neck seal of his helm and push up underneath to penetrate the soft flesh under his jaw. He found purchase with one of his feet and pushed hard, breaking the creature's questing finger. The thing's grip was back in a moment, pinning his other arm with its knee as it hammered a saw-bladed knife at the neck joint of his armor over and over again. Any moment, and that blade would be stuck right through his neck. Incredible as it seemed, he was losing the fight, mere seconds away from death. The fire of frustration within Farron, stoked to a raging conflagration by the events of these last few weeks, blazed bright. He felt a wash of molten strength cascade through his tired limbs, a cascade of chemicals that made a surge of adrenaline seem pale by comparison. His Belisarian furnace burned. The lieutenant stood up with a cry of pure animal rage, hauling the giant Xenos with him into the air in one vital feat of strength. He broke its leg with a sharp movement of his arm, then toppled it sideways to slam the beast into the jutting angles of the trophies below with all his considerable weight. Farron's hand shot up, catching the creature's wrist as it raised the combat knife for a stabbing death blow.
He squeezed, the hypersteel coils around his sinews contracting hard as they brought their terrible composite strength to bear.
One by one, he felt the creature's bones break in his grip. The jagged knife tilted, then fell from its quivering claws. Farron grabbed it before it could land and slammed it so deep into the creature's eye socket that only the hilt protruded. The grey giant's pointed black tongue stuck out, long and quivering, as it fell back with a loud death rattle. Out of the corner of his eye, Farron could see Enrod and Ghazaar opening fire upon the shadowy figures in the artificial trees around them. Three fell, their bodies bursting apart. It was enough. The Kroot began to melt away and disappear. The lieutenant peeled his fallen foe's death grip from his arm and stood atop the pile of trophies. It was all he could do not to raise his eyes to the ceiling and cry out to the Omnissiah as the savage energy of victory coursed through his limbs. He took in his surroundings like a barbarian king surveying his new domain, pleased to see that his enemies had fled before him. And he saw the face of a ghost. Interrogator Chaplain Zeroff emerged into the massive artificial clearing, his command squad close behind him. As he made his way through the strange, twisted trees that lined the periphery, he saw a strange vista. There, amongst literally hundreds of dead Kroot forms, stood the Primaris Marines he sought. Their leader, Farron, was atop a pile of what looked like discarded weapons, trophies, no doubt. Before him was a figure all too familiar. Jensa Deel, chief rigger from Saltire Vex and architect of her planet's exodus.
"Let us leave the lovers to it," said Gabriel. "We can detonate the charges and claim collateral damage."
"Imprecise, with respect," said Autonicus, his outstretched plasma pistol steady as a rock. "I have a bead, Interrogator Chaplain. Which one should I kill first?"
"Neither," said Zeroff. "Let's see how things transpire."
"Deal," said Farron. "You're alive."
"Yes," she said. "Thanks to you. Our only chance for survival was to link up with these mercenaries and to get as far away as possible. Thousands of us made it aboard to the outer decks, cramped but safe. And you gave us that chance."
"What? I thought you wanted to wait out the great cycle, then return."
"We cannot," she said. "You know as well as I do that we would need to be quarantined. That weird psychic plague, it lies dormant for now. It has some kind of lifespan, burning bright, then passing on. But how long before it is back?"
Farron said nothing.
"We are striking out for pastures new," she said. "Let us go. Please. We will find a place far from the Imperium and settle that instead. A new beginning."
"You have not the requisite warrant of trade," said Farron coldly, "nor the Primarch's grace to claim a world in the Emperor's name."
"What else can we do?" shouted Delagio. "We have families on this craft, hundreds of refugees and a trade deal that will see us to safety."
"You fired on us," said Farron, looking sidelong at Markins as he tried to hide his flamer amongst the scattered trophies underfoot. "You fired on us and sided with the Xenos over your own kind."
"I fired to miss," said Deel.
"I will not," said Farron, reaching out a hand behind him. Enrod, his eye socket bleeding, placed a reloaded bolt rifle in the lieutenant's hand. Farron nodded his thanks. "I saved your life on Saltire Vex," he said, looking down at Deel. "I saved it again by getting you off planet. I will not save it a third time so you can stoop even lower and spread your treason to more deserving worlds."
"Wait," said Deel, desperately, a single tear appearing at the corner of her eye. She absently wiped it away across the side of her face. It left a glowing white streak in the gloom. "This will all be for nothing if you..."
Farron shot her in the head. A heartbeat later, Ghazaar turned his rifle on Delagio and gunned her down, even as Enrod shot Markins in the chest.
"Let's get this over with," said Farron, turning away and walking towards the core of the Xenos ship.
"Lieutenant Farron,"
said Zeroff, emerging from the tree line with Company Master Gabriel, Epistolary Dothrail, and Autynicus close behind.
"Brother Ghazaar, Brother Enrod, well met.
We observed your measures here. Most effective. Perhaps the link you provide with the cult Mechanicus can be put to good use after all.
Farron nodded, but could not bring himself to meet the chaplain's gaze.
It is time to leave, said Gabriel. Ortinicus has primed melter charges upon the engine core in such a fashion it will trigger a chain explosion. You and your men will accompany us to the Thunderhawk Pride of Lions and return with us to the strike cruiser.
Acknowledged, said Farron, dully. Have faith, Lieutenant, said Zeroff, laying a reassuring hand upon his pauldron as he guided him towards the exit. Your deeds this day have not gone unnoticed, not by the Emperor himself, nor by your immediate superiors.
That is what I am afraid of, thought Farron, but he did not say a word. Farron felt the pressing weight of acceleration as the Thunderhawk, Pride of Lions, shot from the exterior of the Kroot war sphere like an eagle soaring from a mountain peak into the open skies. When it was some distance away, its pilot, Ortinicus, sent a tight-beam SARM of activation to the munitions he had sown within the war sphere's core. Tapping an appeasement rune, Farron brought the war sphere into focus on the faded disposition data slate within the transport hold. The ugliness of the Xenos fortress and the events that had transpired inside it made his soul ache. Then, as he watched, light began to stream out from the insides of the giant spacecraft. It began to fall in on itself, then come apart in a stately collapse that left it no more than a field of void-claimed debris. Not one of the thousands of screaming voices that accompanied its destruction could possibly have made its way across the void of space, but Lieutenant Zedro Farron felt he heard them nonetheless.
Epilogue.
Master Castellan Modron came round slowly, screwing his eyes shut hard before blinking away the searing, blinding afterimage of the orbital strike. His displacer field, an irreplaceable relic of his chapter, had teleported him away at the moment of the orbital land strike, and in doing so had unquestioningly saved his life. The octagonal hall stank of acrid smoke, burning paint and ionized stone. Apart from winding trails of dust, nothing moved amongst the ruin of rubble, torn bodies, and collapsed slabs of ceiling. Several of his brothers were buried under the detritus, including those he counted closest to him. It was a heavy price indeed. There it was, the architect of all this destruction. The Xenos killing machine, finally revealed as the giant white warsuit it truly was. Even broken and splintered, even half-molten and gouting smoke, there was something elegant about its contoured plates and sweeping lines. The Tau Empire was getting more advanced, more dangerous with every passing year. Modron stood up, staggering as rubble shifted under his feet. His body ached in a dozen places, and he could taste blood on his gums. But he was alive. It was more than could be said for his company champion, his foremost librarian, his trusted veterans, and his finest devastator squad. Here and there, a white-armored limb stuck out from the rubble, but few life signs registered upon his helm display. Though he hated himself for it, there was one life sign he cared about most of all. Modron made his way over to the torn-open Xenos warsuit, his blade still clutched in one numb fist, held ready. Should there be so much as a shiver, a twitch of an eyelid, he would haul that Xenos bastard out from his nest and make him pay a thousand times over. Somehow, the Master Castellan knew he would be sorely disappointed, even before he placed a boot on the flank of the ruined warsuit and hefted it onto its side. Sure enough, the cockpit inside was empty. Almost. Modron was about to turn away and begin the long and painful work of rebuilding, when he saw something odd within the contoured, over-luxurious cocoon. He frowned, reaching down to take the object from beneath an ejector drawer cast in the negative image of a bulky pistol. Smooth, round, and held clamped within a vise of iron, the artifact was unquestionably a yellowed skull. To his disgust, its teeth bit together in a strange, irregular rhythm. Clack, 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 clack. He snatched up a length of heraldic banner that had once hung from the chamber's wall and started to bundle the relic away from sight. As he rapped, it was not the skull itself, but the familiar icon on the side of the iron device that made Modron's blood run cold. It was the symbol of their parent chapter, the Dark Angels.
It appears the tutor succumbed to his obsession with the student, said Aun Shao.
As she approached the empty cryostasis cylinder in Contingency Zone 8, Commander Shorestrike watched her make the slashing finger motion of the wounded soul.
As we knew he would, she continued. Though their roles are soon to be reversed once more, their connection has a strange beauty poised as it is between symbiosis and mutual hatred.
We of the Firecast are often ruled by our hearts, said Shorestrike,
tilting his head in agreement as he came alongside her.
It is our greatest strength and our deepest weakness.
The commander watched, a feeling of numbness spreading within him as the ethereal placed her hand on the jamb of the cylinder's cryolock and held it there as if to feel its heartbeat. The two stood in silence, the emptiness before them echoing the void in Shorestrike's chest, the void at the heart of the entire expedition.
Do you judge the Tha-Hasiro a success, honored Aun? Said Shorestrike eventually. Oh, yes. I am no warrior, but I have seen enough of the footage to appreciate the potency of the outcome, against Gueran Shah, no less.
A true display of the Firecast's mastery of war, agreed Shorestrike.
It is only a shame that O Veza cannot know just how sound his theories proved to be all those Tau Seer ago.
Sound enough to replicate the process?
Certainly, said Aun Shao. My peers and I shall determine just how that is to be done before the matter is taken to an elemental council. I should think an even 64 Tha-Hasiro should be a good place to start, should we be able to find that many monads of the requisite potential. It will take at least a few generations for them to yield results, of course. But upon the culmination of the process, we will have an army like no other in the galaxy. It will be my legacy to the Tau Va.
And will Tutor Twice Blade be sentenced to the Malk La for his crimes?
Of course, said Aun Shao, turning with a look of mild confusion. That is what the ritual is for, after all.
Even though we deliberately allowed him to transgress, though we led him to the act of unleashing the living weapon by the manner of its forbiddance and ensured that none stood in his way?
Even so.
I see, said Shorestrike, his tone cold.
How could it be any other way, after what he took it upon himself to do? Asked Aun Shao, the deep pools of her eyes wide. After he committed to such a flagrant gamble with the Tau Empire's resources, we can attribute the source of his behavior to his stasis anachronism and to the fact he once fought at the side of the rogue commander Farsight. Looked up to him, if the records of Dal-Ith are true. Tutor Twiceblade will become an exemplar as to why taking the initiative in inter-caste matters is to be discouraged. If he survives his Malkla, of course.
As you say.
Shorestrike summoned his nerve, finding the remnants of his old confidence within himself before continuing.
Aun Shao, he said, might I be allowed to enter cryostasis myself in the conventional manner? I would greatly value a chance to rest, body and spirit, and help the Tau Va of the future instead of the present.
That way he might be free of the ghosts that plagued him, thought Shorestrike, and the memories of the souls he had consigned to oblivion. Since the ordeal of their expansion, the limbo of timelessness had seemed infinitely preferable to the trauma that haunted his mind every dark time deck. Though the commander did not speak of his feelings, something in Aun Shah's eyes told him she understood his motives very well, nonetheless. The ethereal made the sign of the flower petals closing at dusk, sighing gently before continuing.
Oh, no, Commander, she said. You are far too valuable as a focal point for the fourth sphere expansion for us to allow that. You must know this.
Shorestrike cast his eyes down.
You and I witnessed something in the sub-realm, continued Aun Shao. Something unnatural and twisted that needs to be destroyed. None amongst us may rest until the Tao Va is pure again, even should that take us to the winter of our lives and beyond. Now, put into motion the location and recovery of the living weapon. He is too useful to lose.
Of course,
said Surestrike, maintaining his mask of composure as he made the sign of the dutiful servant. Inside, his soul was screaming. Deep in the secret heart of the executioner's blade, Lieutenant Farron, Brother Gazar, Brother Enrod, and Sergeant Pavel stood shoulder to shoulder in a rough circle. They were surrounded by tall, sputtering candles, each ringed with the iconography of the First Legion, and the scent of incense hung in the air. A strange half-cyborg servitor with a skull for a head scratched at the walls with a hammer and chisel, engraving something into the furthest corner of the room.
"I had my misgivings," said Zeroff
as he walked slowly around the four warriors.
"Sore misgivings. But you have proved more than useful to our cause. You have proved discerning, resourceful, lethal, unstoppable in your duty. These are qualities we value highly in the upper echelons of our chapter."
Farron felt his spirits rise just a little at Zeroff's words, though the thunderclouds that had gathered around his psyche still rumbled in the back of his mind.
"More than that," said the chaplain, coming to a halt in front of Farron and looking right into his eyes. "You have proven resistant to the energies used by our direst foes. Able to heal from them without corruption, that is of immeasurable value to us."
Farron thought of his psi wound then, and the vile mutating fire that had burned itself into his memory to haunt his meditations at night. Had the Dark Angels known about them all along?
"There exist many structures and ranks within the chapter that you have not been made aware of," said Dothrael. "They have stood for millennia, primarily to enable us to hunt down and redeem those souls who were once trusted brothers, absolving them of past crimes."
"The traitors," said Farron.
"Yes," said Zeroff. "The fallen."
"Yet we cannot elevate you to the Brotherhood of Huntsmen," said Dothrael. "Not without the consent of Supreme Grandmaster Azrael himself. Instead,"
at this, he pulled out a golden aspergillum and flicked blessed oil at their feet,
"you will be incepted into a new brotherhood entirely until the chapter's elders can decide on the ultimate fate of your kind. But you have proven too useful an asset to waste."
The hairs on Farron's neck stood up at the librarian's choice of words. For a moment, he thought of his friend, Morricani, and the manner of his death. But he said nothing. He had a feeling that within the Brotherhood of the Dark Angels, keeping silent would prove the most useful skill of all.
"The Circle Primaris,"
said Zeroff, touching his Crozius Arcanum on Farron's shoulders, one after another, then doing the same to Gazar, Pavel, and lastly Enrod, whose new bionic eye whirred quietly as it focused on Zeroff's skull-like mask.
"You will pursue leads that we cannot," said the chaplain. "Not only within the Ultima Founding and the works of the Primarch Gilliman, but also the Martian priesthood. You will put the agendas of the chapter, as stated by your superiors, before all other concerns. All that which you witness from this point on belongs to the chapter, and the chapter alone. Do you understand, aspirant brothers?"
"Aye,"
they said as one.
"Then welcome to your new lives."
Farron bowed his head, conflicting emotions tearing at his heart and mind.
"It is common practice in these circumstances for you to be given new names, those of sainted warriors from the dawn of the chapter," said Dothrael. "But as a mark of this historic moment and of your unique origin, you will instead be allowed to keep a version of your own names."
Uttering a phrase under his breath, Zeroff bade the skull-headed servitor in the corner of the room shut down. It sank into itself, becoming little more than a pile of rags and bony armatures that folded away into a small heap. In doing so, it revealed the words it had been etching into the walls. "Brother Ropan, Brother Gallus, Brother Lazen, and Brother Zedro."
Welcome, at last, said Interrogator Chaplain Zeroff, to the Dark Angels.
That was War of Secrets by Phil Kelly, read by John Banks. This recording is copyrighted to Games Workshop 2020.
Audible hopes you've enjoyed this programme.